Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
On today's special episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, celebrating the 2024 Social Work NASW theme, Empowering Social Workers, Inspiring Action, Leading Change, Renee Ingram, LMSW, has joined the show. Renee Ingram is a native to Montgomery, Alabama. During her adolescence, she developed a passion for working with at-risk youth through her role as an after-school counselor. From this experience, Renee decided that she wanted to be a change agent for youth who have experienced social, emotional, economical, and behavioral issues. Renee received her bachelor's degree in social work from the illustrious Clark Atlanta University and received her master's in social work from the University of Alabama with a concentration in children, adolescents, and family. Renee is an LMSW in the state of Alabama and currently works as a children's therapist. Renee has dedicated herself to the helping profession of social work for the past 3 years and is excited for what the rest of her social work journey brings. Welcome back, Renee. Super excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Renee, the motivation behind this year's social work theme proposed by the NASW, Empowering Social Workers, Inspiring Action, Leading Change, states that social workers need support to meet the high demand for their vital work and should get paid higher. What has been your experience with the salary gap within the social work profession? Have you had any experience trying to negotiate your salary? And if so, and or not, what advice would you give other social workers who may be struggling with salary negotiation?
I would just say, I think that my experience has been a little different. Of course, right now I'm in the nonprofit world. So of course that salary is usually pretty set, especially when you're thinking about being primarily grant funded or, you know, you're getting resources through fundraising and things like that. So when I was going through the hiring process for my position now, they told me that my salary was non-negotiable. It was what it was. Looking back on that now from talking to other social workers, even when they say that it's non-negotiable, it's negotiable. Especially with what you bring to the table. But me being entry level and so desperate for work, I took it. And I'm gonna be honest, it was less than $40,000. Like that probably was like a drop in the bucket for someone that has their master's. And I just kind of leapt on that. But I learned from that. And you know, what I've gained from that is you can negotiate your salary. It's really important too. And I think the biggest piece of advice I would give anyone, and I'm speaking to myself too, you know, as far as me moving forward, is do your research. I think it's really important to look at the facts in your area, specifically where you live or the type of job that you're applying for, your credentials, and really look into what is everybody else getting paid. And I think sometimes we kind of shy away from, you know, you never ask anyone what they make. And I think that's kind of been like a taboo thing. Like, you don't ask somebody what they make, that's rude. But I think honestly, truly, I think that has been the most helpful advice I've gotten is ask. Because you never know unless you ask. You might have someone that was entry level just like you, but they asked for more and they got more. And so my questions would be, how did you do that? How did you negotiate? What was the number you had in mind when you walked in the door? Did that change as the interview went on? Like, so I think it's really important for us to ask those questions and not shy away from, you know, asking, I guess, the wrong thing. Because we're all social workers and we all understand that there are a lot of issues with pay across the nation. And a lot of us, I think, are scared to ask because we're used to entry-level jobs paying us what they think we're worth or what they're willing to offer, but we know we're worth more, and we just don't ask those questions. And another thing that has really stuck out to me, talking to other social workers, is the networking piece of it. I did not think about that before going into this job, but they were like, ask former employees of this job. What was that experience like? Because even if they're offering you the best salary, that doesn't mean that that is the best experience for you. And so, all this to say is, I think the main thing when it comes to addressing the salary gap is communication and advocating for yourself. Because I think a lot of times social workers get comfortable, or they're like, this is the norm. We're used to not making enough, so this is okay. But it's not. And so I think we have to be a little bit more comfortable with advocating for ourselves.
Absolutely. That was such a great answer, Renee. And I wrote a couple of things down, but I love that you said asking former employees what their experience was like, because no one so far has said that. That I think is so important because I think it was Arielle in her podcast episode, she talked about some of these jobs will pay you higher, but the turnover rate is so high that you're like, oh, wow, why are you willing to pay me six figures? Right. Yeah. And
Right,
asking
absolutely.
this.
Like, what are they paying you for?
Exactly. And so, that brings me to the next point where you're talking about negotiating salary and them automatically cutting you off and saying, I don't know if they cut you off, it won't be that drastic, but saying salary is not negotiable. But I love that you said it's always negotiable. And even if it's not with the number, say it was 40,000, what are the fringe benefits? Am I able to get mental health days because of the type of work that I do? Can I
Absolutely.
get one or two mental health days a month that doesn't cut into my PTO, my sick or my leave time, right? That I just need to have a self-care day? Or if you have kids, can I get off at 2:30, 3:30 so that I can be at home with my kids? What are some of the fringe benefits that fit your life perfectly that if they can't compensate you, like you said, because it is grant funded monetarily, what are some of the give that they're willing to give you in order for you to have a good work-life balance?
Absolutely. And recently, this past weekend, I had a chance to go to the Millennial Social Work Conference in Atlanta, and I really, really enjoyed that experience. But there was one thing that one of the social workers there said that kind of stuck with me, is that we are not meant to carry this much pain and trauma throughout our life course. And so, even though we're social workers, we're trained to deal with complex traumas and issues, we also have to address how that's affecting us through that vicarious trauma. And so, I honestly wish I would have asked those questions that you're saying, like about the mental health days and what does that self-care look like on this job? Because, me specifically working with youth that have endured trauma, it is a lot to carry. You hear the absolute worst things that you could possibly imagine hearing, and you kind of have to remain, at your calmest, to be the best social worker for that child. And but then at the end of the day, you feel all of that. So where does that stuff go? Like, does it just kind of stick on to you? And so I wish I would have asked those questions about, since I'm dealing with this type of trauma, what services do you have for me? What do those mental health days look like? Even like, do y'all incorporate self-care in the workplace? Like, what does that look like? I wish that that would have been some questions that I've asked coming into this job now. But now that I have all this knowledge and we're having these conversations, now I know moving forward, and whatever my next position might be, I'm definitely going to ask those questions.
Absolutely. I love that you said it's been a learning experience. Learn everything you can. We often
For
say
sure.
that, especially those of us who've been in this field a long time. We say learn everything you can out of position so that it can take you to the next step. but also learning everything you can about yourself, right? And all that. So
Absolutely.
before we move on to the next question, I do want to talk about transparency and salary, because I in the series that we're doing with the NASW social work theme, I got to interview Brittany Fator, and she talked about transparency and salary, and I really liked it. But she mentioned, when I asked her what was it like to ask other social workers what they made, she was so bold with it, right? She felt like it was a generational gap, and that people don't talk about salaries. Like, maybe some of the older social workers are a little bit more uncomfortable talking about salary than some of the younger social workers. But I think when you were just mentioning it, Renee, it felt more like a cultural gap. Like, especially those of us in brown and black bodies, we've definitely been trained not to ask about other people's salary, because, like you said, the way you said it, it's rude.
I don't know what it is culturally. I think there's just certain things that you're kind of taught that is out of respect. And I do agree that there's a lot that goes into being respectful and making sure that you're not stepping on toes. But I honestly now think that when it comes to how much you're worth in your profession, it's worth the ask. And I think the best way to ask that question is, hey, are you comfortable with me asking you how much you were offered or how much you make now and how you got to this point? I think that's better than just like, what do you make? So just asking someone, are they comfortable with sharing that? If it's a no, it's a no. But if they say yes, have that conversation and ask those questions, because you never know where that's going to take you. And that person that might have shared that with you might help you in your negotiation process, or might put in a good word for you. Just never know.
Absolutely. I love that you said that is a way you can ask the question, and you can even preface it by, especially within ASW theme, since we're talking to other social workers, we are trying to empower social workers to talk about their salary so that we can get higher pay. And having that, can we talk about transparency of salary? And then, if they don't want to tell you exactly the dollar amount, maybe even asking a range, you know what I mean? Like, is it between 62 and 75? And so if they don't feel comfortable saying they're at, 60, they can say, yeah, that's a good one to ask. Plus, I believe asking those social workers, especially those who've been in these agencies and organizations a long time, that might empower them to go back to the table to ask for increase as well.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a good point too. What I've learned from more seasoned social workers is like you kind of get what is the word? Like, I guess kind of grandfathered in. And so then you're kind of stuck in that wage for a period of time because it's comfortable. You're tenured, you're kind of stuck at this point. It's comfortable for you. But just because, it's comfortable doesn't mean that that's okay. Because with all the prices of everything going up in the world right now, you can definitely demand more. And no matter, whether you're entry level or you've been here for a minute, it's okay to ask more, so you can afford your life. I think, I don't know why social workers have been kind of taught, to kind of just deal with it. I even remember when I was going through my undergraduate program, and I think I had went to like a doctor's appointment, and one of the doctors had, I told him I wanted to do social work, and he was just like, you're not gonna make any money doing that. He was just like, you need to think about another profession. Like, have you thought about psychology or, all these other different areas? And I was like, whoa, like, he's prepping me for the worst. And this is not even in his scope to even tell me this stuff. But, I think people have such this huge perspective of social work. And I think for so long, we've kind of let them run with it. And, the more that we talk to each other and we learn from each other, I think it's like we all recognize that it's not fair. We understand that the burnout is really high. If you're not getting paid enough and you feel like someone's running you ragged, you're definitely not going to want to keep showing up. And one thing that, people have told me is that they don't want to stay in the profession. I've had numerous friends that I've graduated with that have gone back and gotten a different degree because they felt like they weren't getting paid enough or they weren't valued enough. And I think that has a lot to do with how we're educating each other, because if we're not helping the next social worker move up, then we're not going to keep anybody in social work.
Absolutely. We got to talk to each other and not think that it's rude. And not think
Right.
that it's true. Renee, you talked about especially more seasoned social workers demanding more, and because of the crises that we're in. And the NASW has shared in its press release and proclamation for Social Work Month that social work is one of the fastest growing professions in the United States, and that we are on the front line for some of the toughest crises this nation has faced. Do you mind giving me some examples of your frontline experience, and what advice would you give to social workers entering the field over the next few years?
Okay. I really had to like ponder over this question because there's so many different answers. But I will say the biggest crises that I've had to face, primarily working in mental health and working with trauma, has been the increase of sexual abuse and other forms of abuse. I think that after COVID, we definitely saw an influx in these cases, not because it wasn't already happening, but because now we're all at home and we can see that this is happening. And so those cases came in droves. I had so many children that were left at home unsupervised. They might have, developed problematic sexual behaviors where they're touching their siblings or someone within their family is touching them. So it just kind of created this cycle of abuse. And so now it's become more of a complex issue, and how do we address that? And I think it's also created an issue for some social workers. How do we reunify a family now that we have all of these issues that have spilled out of that? Another aspect that I wanted to touch on, and I know NASW has touched on this too, is the increase in suicide. That has been so super hard navigating because now it's kind of infiltrated into schools a lot more than I've ever grown up with it. Before, you would hear about like, rare instances where someone was being bullied and then, it kind of progressed. But now you have kids that are researching it on school computers. How can I do this? I just don't want to be here anymore. And so these schools are flagging these computers, and that's how I've been getting some of my cases where kids are desperate. They're trying to reach out and find ways to end their lives. And I think that the hardest thing as a mental health professional is asking the why or how did this happen? How did we get here? And addressing those gaps and where we could have been better. Because I think with the world shut down, there was only so much that we could have done. And, when you're a child, those resources are very limited, especially if you don't have parent involvement. And so when you're seeing these influx of cases, when it comes to suicide, there could be so many different triggers. We don't know what that home life is like, or what the school life is like, or what that balance has been like for them in their lives. And I've seen some children that have taken on the roles of being caregivers, and that is a lot of weight on a child. So then you're looking at that aspect of it, and it's like, what do I address first, right? So, this is kind of like my complex answer into saying, how do we move forward from what we learned post-COVID? Because I honestly think that COVID exposed a lot of things that there's gaps in as a community and as a whole. But I think the biggest thing is how do we bring mental health two schools more so than we've had done in the past. And I can only speak from my experience just, being in Montgomery, Alabama, but mental health in schools is so tiny. You have some schools that you just don't have a reach in as far as providing those services. I know there's plenty of schools in Montgomery that I don't even go to, or my agency doesn't even go to. There are schools that have a school counselor, but they're there for administrative work. Some don't have a social worker on site. Some of them are kind of floating. So, I mean, there's so many gaps and where you could really address issues with these children, but you gotta have somebody present in order to be there and be like a sounding board for them. And so one thing that I really want to motivate social workers coming into the field is being able to recognize how to be that advocate and be that person. Because there's some issues that we can't fix overnight, but there's some things that you can advocate for. If you're seeing these children fall in the cracks and this is at your school, find those resources, do the best that you can. And I think that that's like somebody, on the outside looking in is like that's something small, but that's huge. Because if you are on the front lines and you're seeing something that's not right, it is so important to say something. And I think that social workers coming in, and I can speak for myself too, when I was a social worker coming in, I wanted to save the world. I was like, I can do this, I can do that. But you gotta think, kind of like realistically, what can you do today in your job that is going to be the best for your clients? And that's going to be advocating, giving them the resources that they need. And so, one thing that I would say is just be flexible, and be open, because there's going to be some situations where you're not going to fix everything about it. You're not going to save everybody, but you can say that you did the best that you could and you gave them all the resources that they needed to make the best decision for them. But I wish that as social workers, we could address every national crisis that comes up. But there are some things that we have to do that's in our scope today that's going to get us, to that bigger picture. And I think that kind of goes back to us communicating too. I think even, when you're talking about handling crisis, how else do you handle a crisis without communication? You have to talk to somebody and find a social worker that knows maybe a little more than you do in a certain area. I've had moments in my career working as a therapist where I'm calling up a school social worker and I'm like, hey, do you know if there's something at the school that is viable for my client to use? Like, do y'all have like student support services that can help with this? Or, I might have a client that they don't have uniforms for school. Who do I talk to? So I think even if it's somewhere that you don't know, I feel like it's so important to have those conversations because we're both still advocating, but it might take a few more steps for us to get there.
I love that. And Renee, when you were just talking about that student who might need a school uniform, your job description says therapist. And nothing to other professions, but as social workers, even when we have the job description that says therapist, we're just dealing with the emotional body is therapist, quote unquote, right? But Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if this baby doesn't is sad and wants to hurt themselves because they just need simple things like a school uniform. You can't deal with the self-actualization part until you get his basic needs met. And so you're calling up that school social worker to see, hey, how can I get this babe a uniform?
Absolutely.
And that's why social workers
Absolutely.
are needed. Yeah,
Yeah.
that was great.
And one thing that and I had the pleasure of listening to Mr. Estreet, the CEO of NASW, speak this weekend, and that was something that we talked about, is all of these positions that require social workers, a lot of them do not have social worker in the title. But that doesn't mean that we're not doing the work. And so, one thing that I've had to do is really stay true to myself. I mean, I'm the only social worker on my team, but so that's a hard, place to be in itself. But when I'm thinking about my client, it's absolutely what you said. I have to make sure that their needs are met. If they don't have food, if they don't have clothes, if they can't pay their rent, it's going to be really hard for them to show up and listen to me when they come to our sessions. If you don't have what you need, that'll be hard for anybody, And it's really hard to focus on your mental health when you might not know when your next meal's coming. And so I would rather, find someone that knows somebody that can handle that for me. So then when we have our session, we're good and we're ready to go and we can focus on our treatment goals. So I would never let, any title stop me from doing what I know I'm supposed to be doing. So.
I love that. In all the jobs that I've had, no matter what the job description title said, when I introduce myself, I always introduce myself as a social worker. And I also think by doing that, that changes the narrative. Oh, social workers can do that. Oh, social workers can do this. When you introduce yourself as a social worker, when someone may think you have a particular title. So we're everywhere. We are everywhere. Renee, you are going to be in LICSW in the next year or so. Congratulations, you did it, girl. That is the highest license recognized by this profession. With that license comes an energy of leadership within the profession. How do you see yourself as an agent of change, and what changes would you like to see happening in social work?
One thing that has really been on my mind for the past few weeks is what do I want to do with this license once I get it? Like, where do I want to take this? And honestly, it's still like a little like mustard seed of a dream right now. So it's not fully like together. But what has been on my heart for the past few weeks is like I really want to create a safe space for Black and Brown people. And that has really been on my heart because I would love to do this on my own and have my own practice and it just be me. But honestly, truly, like I really want to bring other Black professionals in on this. Like I would love to have an agency where, it's Black professionals, male, female, and we are, in this space together. And creating a safe space for other people and letting people know that it is okay to be a Black or Brown person that suffers with mental health issues. I think that's something that we've been trying to work towards for a long time. And I still feel like there's still so many stigmas around it. I think that we could talk about that all day of how many, stigmas we can come up with and what's been kind of perpetuated in the community about being strong or pushing through those issues. But I really want to create a space where you don't always have to push through. You can be vulnerable, you can be sad, and this is your space to do that with someone that looks like you and can understand what those struggles are. I can remember so many sessions that I've had with kids that look like me, and I have to tell them it's okay to cry. Like, take a minute. You can cry in here. And then it's like, that's all they needed, Like they just needed someone to validate that. And so I want to continue that when I do have the ability to start my own thing. But one thing that I really want to see change in the profession truly is, and I guess I don't know if this is tangible or not, but I really want to change how people perceive us. Like I really do, because, I think that people see us as just strictly child and family, and that's kind of where we start and end. But I would love for people to really understand how multifaceted social workers can be. I have friends that work in program management. I have friends that are working for corporate agencies or HR. So I know that it's doable. I know that we're everywhere. But I would love for specifically new social workers to know that there's more options out there. And, also too, that you don't have to stay in one area forever. I think that's another thing I've noticed about our culture too. It's like you find a job, you stick with it, you switch up too much, you're unstable. Like, I've always heard that my whole life. Like, you're supposed to stick with your job and retire and have that stability, but you can still have stability in different areas. And I think it's okay to be interested in different things. So I've learned a lot by, being in this supervision group with you and talking to other social workers, because it's opened up my mind to the possibilities. But a lot of people still don't know. I mean, they're going through school and getting these degrees, and they're like, what do I do with this? So I think it's important for us to educate even the younger generations about what can you do with this degree? What does that mean for you? And what kind of weight does that hold? And so I think us having these conversations about how to advance the profession financially, but also the perspective, I think is going to be a huge, huge deal moving forward.
Absolutely. Oh, that was such a great. And I hope that this podcast is being a part of that movement and changing how people perceive social work, because folks like you being brave enough to come and do public speaking and tell your stories about how you're on the front line, what you've learned about salary negotiation, and even your mustard seed of faith of what you plan to do as you continue along your social work journey, that definitely changes the perception of what social work is. And so, thank you, Renee, for coming on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. You are just so full of wisdom. I told you it's in your DNA, girl. It is in your DNA. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you liked this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.